This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatto. Later in the hour, NASA Chief Jim Bridenstine is here to answer your questions about NASA and the future of American spaceflight. Do you have a topic? You have something you want to talk about? You make the call, but only if you make the call. Our number, 844-724-8255, 844-SCI-TALK, or you can tweet us at SciFry. But first, in other space news, commercial spaceflight is having a good week this week after private company SpaceX automatically docked its Crew Dragon capsule with the International Space Station. And this morning, it splashed down safely in the Atlantic Ocean. He'll tell us more about the story, plus other short subjects in science. Is Amy Nordrum, news editor for the IEEE Spectrum. Always good to see you, Amy.
Thanks, Ira.
So let's talk about this. So it sounds like an exciting week for SpaceX.
It was. This was actually a very fun story to follow. You know, NASA is eager to come up with a new U.S.-made vessel to transport astronauts and even potentially space tourists to and from the space station. The space shuttle program ended in 2011, and since then we've been relying on Russian-built capsules and rockets to transport people to and from. So NASA has awarded almost $7 billion to both SpaceX and Boeing to develop their own rockets and crew capsules to transport to and from. And this was one of the first tests of the system that went all the way to the space station, successfully docked, and then returned. This is just the first step. Boeing will be testing its own capsule, which it calls Starliner, no later than April, NASA says. And then they'll continue on with actual crewed tests, where they will have astronauts in these vessels, in these capsules, rocketing up to the space station and then returning home. And those are also expected to take place for both companies this year.
How did they know that this capsule was safe for human beings?
Well, that's what they're testing in this particular demonstration. Yeah. So they had an astronaut dummy named Ripley strapped to the seat that one astronaut or space tourist could soon occupy. There are four seats in the SpaceX capsule, and Ripley was in one of them. This dummy is equipped with all kinds of different sensors. They didn't get specific on what the sensors are, but you'd imagine they'd be wanting to measure things like a force and acceleration as the dummy goes up and returns back home. And, you know, we'll hear what they conclude from that, but that was their way of kind of seeing what an astronaut themselves or a space tourist themselves will experience in this capsule if it actually does make it into commercial use.
Interesting. The capsule docked automatically. Maybe it's a preview of the Tesla full self-driving mode in the capsule.
Yeah, in a different format for a different vehicle. Yeah, it had another fun passenger. It actually had a plush Earth toy that SpaceX staff put into the capsule before it went. It's been floating around, bopping around the space station. The astronauts have been taking photos with this toy called Earth. So it had a couple of few fun passengers on board.
That's great. Let's move on to another story. It sounds like we don't have to worry about being hacked in quite the same way that we used to.
Yes, I think this might be good news. I'm not sure. But IBM has put out a new report talking about security trends and basically what kinds of hacks they're seeing more and less of. This is looking at trends from 2008. And you may have heard of this type of hack called ransomware, where a hacker takes over a system, shuts it down, prohibits access to the files, and then charges a ransom to the user to return it and restore the system. This has been used as a technique in the past. But IBM's report says that is kind of going by the wayside. Hackers are finding it's really not worth the trouble. It's not that great of an attack, perhaps. And they're moving on to something called cryptojacking. So this is actually when a hacker surreptitiously starts using your computing power on your machines or your company's machines to mine cryptocurrencies in the background. So they're not stealing anything. They're not limiting access to your files. They're just, kind of using your computing power without your consent to create a cryptocurrency.
So you have no idea.
Windfall.
Maybe if the fan on your laptop starts going a little faster.
Yeah, that's about the only way you'd know, if it starts to slow down. But it's, it's funny because ransomware, it was very obvious in your face.
Right.
Your whole system, turns black and you get a message that you need to wire this ransom. But this is the exact opposite. It's very, I don't want to say innocuous, but it's very subtle.
And I guess if you had to choose between the two, cryptojacking?
I would choose cryptojacking, yeah, if I had to choose one or the other. I mean, ideally neither, but it is less disruptive. The hackers, it's harder to trace back.
And,
so,
well, we don't get any of the cryptocurrency that they're mining.
Unfortunately, no.
No, well, let's work on that. All right, let's look at some bad news maybe for endangered gray wolves. Tell us about that.
Yes, well, the Secretary of the Interior this week on Wednesday said that the Interior Department would be proposing to delist gray gray wolves from the Endangered Species Act. So this would remove protections for these wolves that it has had because it's on this list protected by the act. And the story is a little bit more complicated. So this delisting effort would apply to one population of gray wolves known as the Great Lakes population. So those are the wolves in, you know, Michigan, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. Wolves in part of the country known as the Northern Rockies have already been delisted, and states there have their own different kinds of protections and ways of allowing hunting and trapping of wolves. But this, you know, this delisting would actually apply to all wolves, you know, and make it so that they're all delisted across the United States. And environmentalists are, you know, not saying it's not quite time yet. Wolf populations have recovered from their historic low of about 1,000 wolves in the lower United States, but they're not fully yet restored to their historic range, which covered large swaths of the U.S. And so they're, some are saying that, you know, we need more time, and these wolves, you know, should still have the protections under the Endangered Species Act.
Finally, some drama in the world of research publishing, something we don't really talk much about. A company called Elsevier, most people know that, and the University of California.
Yes,
some drama going on there.
That's right, yeah. Just about a week ago, the University of California said that it would no longer be paying Elsevier the fees it has traditionally paid them to access a large number of academic journals. Elsevier is a very large publisher. It has about 2,500 titles. And University of California said that this was because Elsevier could not provide open access by a default setting to all of the research published by University of California scientists, which is obviously a publicly funded institution that's using a lot of taxpayer money for research and through grants. And so, you know, the University of California will no longer be paying Elsevier for access to its journals.
Why do they need, you know, journals now? You have public, you know, PLOS and all those public publishers. Why do you need to pay Elsevier, you know, for your Lancet or something like that?
Yeah, I think that was their argument, and they, you know, we'll see. They said they're still open for negotiation with Elsevier, but at this moment, you know, they're not going to be paying them I think it was $11 million per year for access to Elsevier journals. It's a big statement in terms
it
of
is.
Open
it
access.
Others could follow. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you.
Amy Nordstrom, news editor for the IEEE Spectrum.